asked me once, what was in room IOI? I told you that you knew the answer already. Everyone knows it. The thing that is in room IOI is... information on intelligence.
Hello everyone to another episode of Room IOI on the Hackerspace Signal program. My name is Astra and with me tonight is Jason E. Street. Hi Jason.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good. Where are you at the moment? You sound sleepy.
Oh, yeah, it's in the morning. I'm in New York City. It's like went out and did a night tour and did some, trying to cause some mayhem last night and had some fun.
Always with the mayhem.
Yeah.
So for those of our listeners who aren't quite familiar with your name, they might find you on Twitter actually, as at Jason Street, and Jason is actually spelled with a Y, just for the ones that really do not know how to even Google. They're not listening. Hopefully they're not listening. So, what do you do for a living, Jason? Why are you on this show?
I was asking myself the same thing because, like, there's all the cool kids are here. I don't know why you have me on this one, but I have two jobs. I have a day job and a night job. My night job is I'm a CIO of Strategy One Solutions, which is a pen testing company. We do pen testing. I've been expert witness in civil and criminal cases. Was two successful civil cases against the RIAA. Do all the little fun things of breaking into networks. And then my day job, I'm the AVP of information security for a financial institution, where I'm doing the exact opposite. I'm doing the defense. I'm monitoring the firewalls, building out the infrastructure, watching the IDS systems, implementing IPS, IDS, responding to any kind of incidents that occur on the network. So it's like I do the yin and the yang.
As you mentioned, your night job kind of first and your day job afterwards. For how long have you been in your day job? Is that more recent?
My day job, I've been doing this, the day job, for about 7 years now. At this one location. I've been in information security for over 10 years. It's like I tell people it's like, because people talk about the CISSP, and I tell them, like, well, I got my CISSP before there was a boot camp, before there were the How to Do It for Dummy books. It's like, I mean, I had to read the red book, the brown book. It's like I went through the mandatory and discretionary access control list. It's I actually had to study it and stuff, for it before I actually took it. There was no really classes for it. It was back in 2001 that I took my CISSP.
But still, you can't really live without your night job, I guess. It's more of a, is that what you rather do as opposed to your day job, or is it something that you do just to make up for the
right
hat's work?
Well, I really, the funny thing with me is that I'm always going to be more partial to my day job. It's like, it's all about the defense. I like being one of the good guys. I like being able to defend a network, but you can't do that properly unless you know how they're going to attack. So my night job sort of came out of trying to be better at my day job. It's like, I want to be able to do, really good at doing the defenses. And it's like, and I love being able to build a defense to build something that, and say, hey, you know what? This is how I would break into the network. Let's fix this. Let's make sure this is protected and let's sure we're monitoring it. Because I've actually been able to have incidents that have happened during my day job. And those incidents occurred. And not only were we able to withstand the attack, and we were able to acknowledge the attack as soon as it happened instead of having to wait a certain amount of time, but I was able to actually then trace back to the person who actually did it. And I mean, and that's one of the cool things about understanding the threats and being able to actually do something besides just, make sure we close a port on a firewall and hope that we can, withstand it.
Right. That's an excellent approach. Actually, I think I've seen you talk a couple of times, but one of the talks was I think at BrewCon, could this be, last year?
Yes. Yes, sir.
You were talking about tiger teams. Now, where does this term even come from?
Well, actually, I wasn't talking about the tiger teams. That was Chris Nickerson.
Cripes. Cripes.
Okay. It's like, trust me, that man knows way more about the subject than I did. It's like, tiger teams are the actual, they're the actual physical. We're not just going to come in and look to see if you've got something wrong and just, you know, audit your network. We're going to go in and steal your server and then give it back to you. We're going to do exactly what a bad guy is going to do. I'm not up to the tiger team. It's like, I'm more like a black cat team or something, you know. It's like I'll show you how unlucky you can be, and the things that I could do. It's like if I was going to go all the way. But Chris Nickerson, he goes all the way. It's like he's a very scary individual. He's a very great guy. He's a great individual, but he's a very scary guy. It's like you want to see him.
Definitely so. Yes. Besides your day and night job, does that leave any room for other occupation in some of the other way? Do you have a hobby?
Your
night job your hobby, right?
Yeah, exactly. I tell people, it's like they ask me, it's like, well, do you sleep much? You're always traveling, you're always doing these things. I said, well, it's real simple. As long as you're a horrible husband and a lousy father, you can do this kind of stuff. You can be this committed. but in actuality, this is not a job for me. And I tell people, when you're in information security and people that want to start in information security and they're going to these colleges and taking these courses so they can get directly into information security, I try to explain to them, it's like, you better not be doing this because you think it's a good career choice, because you think there's going to be good money in it, because you're going to fail. You have to enjoy what you're doing. You have to have the same kind of passion and the same kind of zeal as the bad guys are, because they're having a blast. They love what they're doing. You know, they're getting up at noon, checking their botnets. It's like playing some Xbox Live after they've stolen accounts. And then they're raking in the money. It's like you have to have that same kind of passion. And the people in information security, I see a lot of them that are just, they're here to get the money. They're here to get the whatever kind of recognition. I mean, they're doing it for the wrong reasons. I have a lab in my house. It's like one room just dedicated to my computer equipment, where I'm building just a honey net where I can go in and break into my own systems and learn more things. Because trust me, it's like I am not, and I've never claimed to be an security expert. I'm someone that just loves to do what I do, and I'm constantly learning. And I mean, there's so many people out there that I can learn from out there that I get to talk to and communicate with it, which is a really great blessing. And I'm just constantly having fun with this, because every day there's something new to learn. Every day there's a new vulnerability out there. There's a new way that you're going to need to protect your environment, because, you know, they're never going to give up.
Now, talking about you learning things, isn't there also this need to share your knowledge yourself? Like, make other people learn from your experience so that they don't have to come up with the same mistakes again.
Oh definitely. It's like I tell people, one of my favorite sayings is, you know, a smart man learns from his mistakes, a wiser man learns from someone else's. And unfortunately, with my life, I'm usually that example of, you know, learn from my mistakes. It's like I've made plenty. and I'm usually trying to be pretty honest about them. So it's like that's one of the key things. It's like it's about educating. It's about helping others. I'm a lead trainer for ECI certification for EC Council. I did write a book with several people and said, you know, to help actually start that education process and just share some of the knowledge and trying to get information security out to people who don't usually read or are interested in information security.
Now, what I'm trying to get at, actually, is our listeners might still recall our last show at Room IUI, where we had a very special guest. That was Christian Riley.
Yeah.
And I believe Christian Riley, in one or the other way, is, well, we could say a student of yours, a mentee. Now, this is due to a program that has well, I guess just came up within the past couple of months. And the name of that program is InfoSec Mentors. What is InfoSec Mentors?
As you can tell, I'm still waking up. Yeah, InfoSec Mentors is a program to task people that are in the industry that have been established or have been around for a while to take people that are just getting into information security and help them learn some of the ropes and what's going on and give them some information. Christian O'Reilly, it's very hard to be his mentor, and quite frankly, it's because there's so much I can learn from him. That it's like, I don't know why he was a mentor himself. It's like, so it's a really difficult relationship with me. It's like, I try to help him out as much as I can, but I don't think he's getting the best benefit from a mentor. I mean, for him to actually have a mentor, he needed somebody like Adam Laurie or, you know, FX or, you know, someone that actually, you know, who's got the talent that they could have actually teached him something. I'm like, I look at Christian O'Reilly and I see what he's doing. I mean, he's bringing so much to the community already, right, with the Eurotrash podcast and all the things that he's contributing and helping out with, that I'm like, dude, why weren't you my mentor?
For people wondering about where they could find more information on InfoSec Mentors, I think it's just simply InfoSecMentors.com. So... besides the fact that probably Chris is not only just a very good student, but also very educated already, what being a mentor from your side, from your point of view, what do you do? I'm just trying to find out or to establish do you want to become a mentor? Do you want to become a mentee for people that are listening right now? What is the job of a mentor in that way?
I think one of the key things for a mentor is the very first contact that you have with your mentee is the most important, and that's going to be questions like, what do you need to learn? What are you trying to get out of this? What is your goal in information security? What are your passions? What are the things that you like to do? What are the things that you're not comfortable with? What are the things that you don't feel that you're doing well enough and that you'd like to learn more about? And then you try to center on those. One of the things that Chris John Roddy was telling me about, you know, were some of the things that he had issues with. And so I was like, you know what? That's what I'm going to center on. That's what I'm going to try to help you with. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go from there, and I would try to help him. And I'm one of the worst kind of guys to do training because I used to sword fight. I've been sword fighting since I was 7. And when I was trained, like one of the best ways that my teachers would train me, stuff, you know, was like just put me in such a horrible, you know, situation and stuff, you know, that I just had to fight my way out of it and then just try to learn from the bruises. So unfortunately, that's most of the way Christian O'Reilly's been learning through me. So a little bit bad about that.
I believe right at the moment we're experiencing a bit of network issues and lag and everything. But I hope our listeners are still getting along and hearing you well enough to guess the rest of the phrases. Mm-hmm. We now know approximately how you start this InfoSec mentor kind of relationship with your mentee. But is there a specific kind of course of the training, or how much do you get in touch with your mentee? How do you work out his problems?
I think it's going to be that's going to be different case by case basis. I think some mentors and mentees, it's like it may be a daily communication. It's like where they just want to keep in touch and help out with certain issues. And others, it's going to be where they're going to just when they want someone to be able to talk to. You know, it's like they'll go a week or so and not talk to someone. And they're like, man, I'm really having a problem with work. I'm really having a problem with this this vulnerability or this exploit I'm trying to work on. Let me see if my mentor can help me out with that. So it does vary, and it also depends on the – you just have to get that chemistry and make sure that everything's working out well. And that's when you work with the InfoSec mentors program and stuff, you know. And sometimes they're not going to work out just right. Sometimes they work out perfectly. This is, I mean, like I said, I think it's a great match between me and Christian Rowley because, I mean, I respect him and I think he's a great guy. But also the skill set, it's like he calls me when he has an issue or I think, or I'll call him when I think he might be having a problem if I see him on Twitter or saying something. But overall, it's going to be based on just the situation.
I see. Another question about the program itself. Is it like you get one mentor to one mentee? Is it like one-to-one or does one mentor, you know, care about multiple mentees?
Yeah, it's a one-on-one, so you get that attention. I mean, trust me, I'm not good enough to be able to handle more than one. It's like, especially, you know, Chris is a handful anyway. So, but yeah, it's a one-on-one because, I mean, that's the way you're really going to need it. It's like, I mean, a mentor is going to have to give all their time and stuff, you know, to helping out one person. And that mentee's got to make sure that they understand that they're that one person. They're important to that mentor. And they're the only ones that mentor is listening to and helping out.
So if some of the other listeners are interested in the program right now, how do you become a mentee or a mentor? Is there a sign-up program? Is there a specific deadline which you have to meet?
No, I don't think there's a deadline. So I think you just have to sign up and select yourself to be a mentor or a mentee. And they do the matching themselves. They look through the different questions. There's all these questions that you answer, and they look at those answers and they try to match it up best to the mentor, to the mentee, based on their answers. So, I mean, I think that's one of the key things. And, I mean, one of the reasons why it's so important is that there's, and this is one of the key failings, I think, in information security is that, we're so horrible in communication. It's like we're so bad about communicating and helping others in the community. And that's something I think that needs to change. It's like we're so busy, you know, trust but verified. I've got NDAs. I can't communicate. And I don't know who you are because I have not seen you in real life. I've only seen you online. And so there's such a horrible methods that we have on sharing information with each other that's the reason why these kind of programs and other programs where you meet, like in hacker spaces, even in InfoGuard or ISA or BC groups and 2600 groups. I mean, it's important to get the information out there and share it. The bad guys have awesome networks set up, in IRC and forum groups and websites where they can share the information and they can get information out there on how to break systems. We in the information security community need to start adopting that and start finding ways to help better educate and help each other out in the industry. It shouldn't be so competitive. It should be everybody helping everybody. I mean, that's my, you know, idealistic dream. But that's why I like hackerspaces so much. That's the reason why I like these groups and stuff, you know, is because they're trying to get the good guys talking to each other and helping each other out and helping us each be better.
So talking about hackerspaces and groups to be involved with, is there a specific group or some of the groups that you've been involved with that kind of formed or shaped the way your professional life is right now?
I'm in Oklahoma, so there's no hackerspace. We're not that cool. It's like, but I've been to several hackerspaces. It's like, and I know a lot of people that are really involved in hackerspaces and are just totally cool people. I mean, you got the one in Chicago. It's like, I've been in the one in Berlin. I mean, and the one in Brussels. It's like, I mean, just meeting some of these people, from these hackerspaces and, especially, you know, Nick Farr, it's like, of course, it's like, I mean, you're meeting these people and I mean, it's, they get it. They understand that they can be, you know, just by helping out and sharing and stuff, you know, they're being positive change. And I think that's really cool. It's just sparking that creativity, sparking that, what else can it do? That's the true essence of being a hacker. It's like, I mean, that's one of the things that we need to reclaim that word back. I tell people, Thomas Edison was a hacker. Leonardo da Vinci was an Uber hacker. I mean, just people that just looked at situations and they said, you know what, we can do it different. We can make it different. And that's one of the things I think the hackerspace has helped create. The things that I've done from trying to create groups and trying to help out groups have been from the actual pure InfoSec side. We have a local ISSA group, Information Systems Security Association, and then also the InfraGuard, which is a U.S.-based, you know, security group. And both of those groups, I've had issues with the way they were a long time ago. And so what I decided to do, instead of just complaining about, you know, where we met or what we were doing, I joined the board of directors for InfraGuard, and I became the vice president of the ISSA chapter in our city, just to help try to do those changes. It's like everybody can complain. It's so easy in this industry to just point out this is broken. Oh, this person got compromised. Oh, this person has a vulnerability, or this person hasn't passed their systems. But what are you doing effectively to change that? What are you trying to do to make it better? It's like, what information are you sharing to help that person patch that vulnerability or show other people there's an exploit to help out? And I think that's one of the things that we're missing a lot in this community that we need to grow. And that's the actually trying to make it better. Stop being the one that's just gets to say, hey, you're failing, and say, hey, you're failing. Can I help you do something with it? Can I help you make it better? Because if I'm spending all of my time trying to make myself look good and you look bad, and you're spending all your time trying to make me look bad and yourself look good, then no one's really looking good. I'd rather spend my time making you look good and me look good, and you spend your time making me look good and you look good, then we're all looking a lot better. And I mean, and it's just, that's my, once again, I'm very idealistic. It's like, and I try that. That's the reason why I'm a lousy manager, because I never got the whole management game down very well. It's like, cause I always thought, you know, let's all just work together, and that doesn't always work. But that's the, one of the key things that we need to do in information security more. We need these kind of positive changes where we're helping everybody out. And I think, places like hackerspaces are a great way to start it. It's like, because information security people should be involved in a hackerspace. They should be at a DC group. They should be at a 2600 group. They should be learning what else is going on out there besides just the infrastructure, just besides the firewall and IDSs. You have to understand both sides of the coin, or you're never going to be totally understanding what your problems are.
So if anyone out there listening to Room IOI right now was getting interested right now and would want to join one of the local ISSA groups, I understand they're all over the U.S.
and the world. ISSA groups are all over the world, actually.
Where would these people go? Is there a website? Is there a sign-up?
Yes, it's ISSA.org.
ISSA.org, actually.
I'm hoping I'm giving you the right URL there. It's like, I feel really bad if it's not.
I'm pretty sure anyone can Google it anyway. Like, spelling out URLs on a radio podcast show might be the wrong approach anyway. Right. As we discussed with Chris already last time. I think we're going into a very, very different chapter right now. So we discussed groups and your job and your involvement. We discussed a couple of conferences, including DEF CON and Security B-Sides with Chris last time around. There is one more thing about your life that makes it very interesting to have you on this show, and that being you wrote a book.
I'll try to think of anything interesting that we've already covered, because I don't think it's that interesting, but okay.
So you wrote a book, which is called Dissecting the Hack, The Forbidden Network. The approach of this book, being a tech book, basically, is very different to all the other tech books you get out there. Since it's split up in two parts, right? You have like one third being a storyline that describes various exploits, the other one being the tech part, which is always referenced within the story. What could you tell us about how you got to write this book?
The whole story came to me in about a three-hour car ride from Oklahoma City to Dallas. I mean, quite honestly, that's exactly how it came through. I was working on an issue. I had a presentation that I gave back in the day called Selling Elephant Whistles, and it was talking about how to get upper management buy-in to the security focus. It was how do you get upper management buy-in to the security process? I mean, I think one of our biggest weaknesses that we have on the straight InfoSec side is getting upper management to understand the issues and then funding those issues and helping to secure their networks and their business. Because business, the business managers, they're intelligent. People, we all love to make fun of the pointy-haired boss from Gilbert and stuff, saying this guy doesn't get it. But we have to understand he's a college graduate usually. It's like he knows what he's doing. He knows how to run his company. He knows what he knows. He doesn't know security. That's why he hires people that know security. But that also means that sometimes he doesn't listen the way he should to security when security is telling him there's a vulnerability, because he's looking at it from the risk side. He's looking at it from his standpoint and his viewpoint, which is from the business of mitigating risk and accepting risk. When we're saying in information security, we want to eliminate risk. And sometimes that's not going to be the case. So I was just going through, like, how do you educate him? How do you educate the CIO, their CEO? It's like, how do you educate them without, giving them a manual? Because they're not going to read a tech book. It's like they're not going to read a pure tech book on information security and be educated. And so then I thought, you know what? CIOs, CEOs, they love spy thrillers. They love Tom Clancy novels and John Grisham novels. So I decided I'm going to disguise my tech book as a fictional story. And then I'm going to make all the hacks real. All the things that go on in the book are going to be totally done in a realistic manner. And using that, make the person interested enough to learn more about the technical side. And instead of stopping the conversation and stopping the book, to have them go and read what was going on the technical side, I would just put annotate and stuff, right there on the section, a little star in parentheses, a page number. And that would make them more curious, too. They'd be like, well, what is that going to? And then it would go to the second half of the book, which is actually a technical section, a technical book, and then they'd be able to read exactly how that vulnerability that they just read was real. I mean, I want them to read the fictional story and say, oh, they can't do that to that network. My Wi-Fi network set up just like that. And then they go back to the second section and they go, oh, man, it is real. They could do this. And it also gives them the context of how these kind of attacks can happen and lets them better understand in those kind of terms, wow, these situations could exist, could be real. And I mean, not maybe terrorists, coming into your network and trying to take over the government, but it's still situations that could occur that could be real, that could be damaging to their systems. And also gives it, from a security professional's point of view, a way to communicate with his upper management in a way that helps put them on even footing and stuff, saying, hey, here's a situation where this has actually occurred in this fictional story that I read, and get them interested and involved in it as well. So basically that's what it was. It's like, I realized a long time ago, I mean, I'm never going to be technical enough to contribute to the community by creating an awesome tool like HD did with Metasploit. I'm never going to have, these kind of vulnerability researches or break systems like FX can. But I've always wanted to be able to contribute. I always wanted to be able to add something to the conversation and add something to the community. And this is where I was able to realize that I could do it. And hopefully that's by creating a dialogue between people in upper management and information security and letting them understand a little bit more from the hacking side and from the computer security side of it.
Now, about the story and the exploits in that story that I mentioned there, you were using a lot of could or possibly within the last 5 minutes. Are these situations that you yourself have run into at some point, or are these completely hypothetical?
Oh, these are completely hypothetical. I've got the three books are done. The second and the third book are going to actually be based on a little bit of the stuff that I've been learning now. But there's a method to every novel. The first one was based on just the basic introductory to information security, where I try to just do some of the basics and just make it. I talked a lot about hacker culture. I talked about a lot of different resources. So someone just now getting into it, like a CIO or CEO, they could read that part of it and start understanding it a little bit more and getting more interested. The second book actually deals with more advanced techniques, like voice over IP, hacking, RFID bombs. I mean, things that are like really a lot more advanced techniques that we're going to be talking about, SSL cert, counterfeiting, doing things of that nature that are going to be a little bit more advanced, and but still done in a way that a CIO or CEO can understand or a layman can understand without having to be involved too much in the information security world. And help explain it. And then the third book is based on disaster recovery, business continuity, insider threats, social engineering, and things of that nature. So it's like by the time you finish with all three books, you've got a good spread of what the InfoSec knowledge bases are, and you get more understanding of them. So it's like it just, and the second book, I promise you and stuff, you know, it's going to be a lot longer story. It's like a The problem, I was really unhappy with the way that the first book was so short, but mostly it's because of the fact that it was done within 1 week, and so it was just in the process of a week, this whole story played out, because we're trying to do the introductory and stuff, you know, just getting introduced. So I've already realized the second book is going to take place over a couple of months, and it's going to involve more details with the characters and more description. Like I said, I like to learn from my mistakes, and so... So I'm really looking forward to the second and third book to help flesh it out and show exactly how good the first book was, because I build off of that one to finish the rest of the stories.
So talking about the second book, the first book, again, for people who haven't really gotten it yet, is called Dissecting the Hack, The Forbidden Network. When is the second book going to come out?
As soon as it comes out of my head. It's I can tell you right now, it's really strange. It's like, the characters are not alive, but I've got the characters in my head. I see the story play out. I know exactly. I can put it this way: in the first book, if you read the epilogue to the first book, that's actually the prologue for the third book. It actually segues into the third book to show you that there is an arc. So if people are going to be reading that epilogue and they're not really understanding the context, that's actually the segue to the third book. Because, I mean, it is an arc. It is a whole story. So we're working on that right now. And, I mean, we're working on some other things with the book, the first book. I think the first book is doing really well. It's like and we're going to build off of that success with some other hopefully other ventures. We do have a website, a companion website with it called dissectingthehack.com. And that's where you can go to help the community. Like I said, I wanted to build a community, and that's what we're trying to build there. We have people that can contribute their own lessons and things that they've learned through videos or just through blog postings, and start sharing that information. We also have the star section, the complete star section from the first, the revised version, up online, where you can actually download it and read it. And it doesn't give you the fictional section because, you know, we still want you to buy the book, but it does give you the star section and gives you understanding on what we were talking about. And also, as like one of the interviews that we did that was in the book, Dan Kaminsky was nice enough to do a video interview that also went into the book. And so, I mean, I think it's a good place to start the communication process of trying to get everybody to working together.
Okay, again, the site is called dissectingthehack.com. I was wondering, actually, when I read the book, there is a lot of DEFCON stickers being mentioned. Quite a lot of DEFCON stickers being mentioned. What's it with DEFCON and you?
I am an unapologetic DEFCON fanboy. I mean, and I'm sorry. It's like a lot of people, and I'm going to lose cool points with some people, and that's fine. I will tell you this, the second book deals mostly internationally. So I'm going to be mentioning CCC. I'm going to be mentioning CBase. I'm going to be mentioning PH Neutral and some of these other conferences overseas, because that's where they're mainly going to be taking it. That's mainly where the storyline goes it starts off in Berlin. So there's going to be a lot of mentioning of the conferences over there. But DEF CON started something with me when I was a lot younger, and I was just beginning into IT and computers. And I read about what DEF CON was like, and I started seeing it. And it helped motivate me to get me interested in wanting to go there. And my first trip to DEF CON, was pretty horrible, actually, from the way that I approached it. But the people were there. It was just so awesome the way people just come up and they would talk to you and they would share information with you. And, you know, you've got these people that are like, you know, the InfoSec rock stars or something. You know, it's like, I mean, and there's these titles. And it's like when you meet them at DEF CON and you see them at a party, they're just cool people that are in here in the industry because they get it and they want to share that. And my first DEF CON, I met Steve Wozniak, H.G. Moore, it's like, FX. I mean, all these people that I could name drop, it doesn't matter. It's like, because back then I was nobody except a stupid guy with blue hair, and they still talk to me. And it's like, and most of the time I was doing was just taking pictures with them, like, hey, look, it's this guy. And I was just a total idiot. I actually wrote a post about that on DEF CON's website. Because, I mean, I to this day, I still just, you know that there's pictures of me circulating, looking like that, out on the internet. But no need to do all that, please. And, but DEF CON always just struck a chord with me because it was just so many people there trying to not just party, but to share information. And also, I mean, it was the only conference that I was able to go to at first, you know. It was like my first introduction. And I think it's a lot of, security and hacker people's first introduction to the scene, you know, to information security and to hacking. That's what they get first. And it's such a good, positive experience because when they get there, they realize, oh, it's not just, you know, going into computers. It's working on hardware. It's lock picking. It's puzzle solving. It's doing all the things that are actually showing you hacking is not just on a computer. Hacking's not a bad term. And I mean, that's one of the good things. I mean, from now I've been to UConn in Brazil. It's like I've seen how the hackers are in South America. I've been to CCC. I've been to PH. I've been to BrewCon. I've been to conferences in China. I started a conference, founded a conference in China, actually. And I see how the different cultures and how they shape the way that the actual hacking scene is and how different it is. And that's one of the things I'm working on right now. Is a new talk about the actual cultures of the hacking scenes, not just the actual people and what hacking is based on a country.
So we could say that DEF CON would be your favorite conference. The other one that you just mentioned, the Chinese hacker conference, when is that? What's its name? What's it called?
This is our second year. It's CaliberCon 2, or it's CaliberCon 2010, but it's our second, it's CaliberCon. It's going to take place December 3rd through the 5th. It's going to be in Beijing. It's going to be at a hot springs resort. It's a very nice location. Our first CaliberCon was last year, and basically it was I was in China for a conference. It was in Shanghai. And I mean, I've never traveled out of the anywhere until 2008. 2008 was my very first time leaving the country, leaving America. And it was straight to Beijing for XCon. So it's like when I do something, I do it big. So my very first trip outside was to China, and it was an awesome place. It was an awesome experience. It was just walking on the Great Wall and meeting some of these other people and understanding the biggest misconception that we have about China. People like to think we got hacked from China, and then they're thinking, well, China. That's so not true. There's so many different provinces and dialects and cultures within that country. That's just like saying we got hacked from America and saying it was just America. When you've got all the different states and you've got the East Coast, West Coast, and the North and the South, and you've got Republicans and Democrats, you've got all these different diverse groups within the country. And so it's like, I don't think we give China enough of understanding that there's those diverse groups as well. And then my second trip there, I was just thinking, it's like, you know what? They don't have their conferences aren't like the DEF CON mm-hmm. conference. They're very, very official, very stately. And so, you know, and I was like, you know what they need? They need to mix it up a little bit. They need a DEF CON hacking, innovate, not just learn and repeat from someone. And that's the reason why Excalibur was born. It was to create a conference that was like not a DEF CON, but it was something that would work there, that would help have some kind of that vibe, a little bit of the CCC, a little bit of PH, a little bit of DEF CON, all rolled up into one conference in China, and just give them something different.
Now, talking about a conference in China, it sounds a little bit like, again, this is just, you know, another draw, but I guess that the conception of hacking in China is very different to ours here. If you go to ExcaliburCon, are you gonna get any of the Chinese hackers speaking there, or is it mostly people from all around the world and I guess Chinese hackers coming in as attendees?
No, it was really good. We actually make it half and half. It's like there is actually we're hoping to have the funding comes through. It's like we're gonna have 20 Western speakers and 20 Chinese speakers. It's like 20 Chinese nationals and then 20 Western speakers presenting. It's going to be we're talking about 3 to 4 tracks right now. We may only go to 2 to 3, but it's going to be a 3-day conference. And so we're going to have a lot of Chinese speakers giving talks on forensics. They're going to give talks on exploits, programs and stuff that they're working on as well. And some of these are actual professors from colleges that do computer security, information security.
So again, for our listeners, probably they forgot by now, ExcaliburCon this year is going to happen from December the 3rd to December the 5th. Is that correct?
That is correct. In Beijing.
So if you probably could take off these days or are around the area, you should definitely drop by. Another favorite thing I was wondering about when back in the days reading your book, I was wondering what your personal favorite piece of literature was, and then again, what your personal favorite in terms of a tech book was. Do you have one? Oh my, I think the connection just dropped. Could you repeat what you said last? Oh my. Huh. Very, very bad connection. I think we're going to play some music in the meanwhile, and I'll give you another call in 2 minutes.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Hi again, this is Esra. You're on Hackerspace's Signal. The show you're listening to is Room IOI, and with me tonight is Jason E. Street. The song you just listened to was Sabotage by Beastie Boys, which is also used in a short film I really like a lot called Unauthorized Access by Annalisa Savage. It's been around for quite a couple of years now, and it is to be found on YouTube, so I really encourage everyone to look up Unauthorized Access by Annalisa Savage. Hi again, Jason. We were interrupted.
Yes, you were.
I was just asking you about some of your favorite books, actually your favorite, well, sort of piece of literature as opposed to your favorite tech book.
Like I said, I mostly read fantasy. I think one of the main books that I like is actually the poems by Williams Wadsworth. just I liked his poetry, and I liked the message that he had in them. Some of it dark and foreboding, but there's always a tinge of something else with it, and I like that. The works of Stephen Brust are my main forte, and some of the main literature that I like to read. I know I'm supposed to say the classics or something like that, but you know, and I've liked some of the classics, but I'm just like a fantasy nerd at heart. You know, I've got swords in my house, and I've got like over 100 swords, spears, and axes in the front living room, so the neighbors don't mess with me too much. But yeah, so I like to read the fantasy. One of my favorite technical books started off with just being some of the instructor Hacking Exposed books, those kind of books that just talk to you about how the actual attack happens and so like and how to fix it and how to do something with it. So I've actually stopped reading. There's some series like one of the Stealing the Network series. I want to read that really bad, and then the Damon and Freedom. I can't read those yet, and I deliberately told myself, it's like, I don't want to read those because I don't want them to even just, you know, unduly influence me when I'm writing my next stories and stuff, you know. And there was issues with the first version of the book, but just for my own personal principles and stuff, you know, it's like, I don't want because my stories are shaded a lot from my real life. Some of the people in the book, some of the characters in the book are actually people that I know. If you go there, you can actually follow the route out that Leon and Hannah and Bob take out of Greens Point Mall. And you can actually take that route out, and you will actually end up right by the Houston Police Department's branch office in the mall. There really is a Brothers Pizza at Greens Point Mall. There really is an arcade in the food court right across the thing from it. There really is a House of Pies right there off of Richmond and Shepherd and stuff, you know, near Westheimer. I mean, there really is a NEPA's where the 2600 group meets, and there's a parking lot right there by it, the Galleria. So all the locations except for a couple of the key fictional ones are all 100% real. And so I own a Mini Cooper. So there was a Mini Cooper involved in the book. I mean, there's just so many different things that I just took from my real life. So it's like, I want to make sure that I keep it from just my experiences with the stories. And a lot of the things that are going to happen in the second book, the dealings with C-Base and PH and CC, those are all things I'm going to work out and incorporate in from my experiences. I actually started the second book, actually started forming last year when I was about to be going to BrewCon. I stayed with a friend, Teton, in Luxembourg. And just like that 3-hour car ride that made the catalyst for the first book to happen, I was in the casemate in Luxembourg, which is these tunnels and these rock formations and stuff, you know, this old fortification that protected Luxembourg in the medieval times and was used during World War II and stuff, you know, to hide from bombardments. And I was going through there and I realized, this is so freaking awesome. And then I got another idea. It's like, this would be a great place to lose somebody because Luxembourg's in a valley. So it's like you start off at the very top. But if you look over one of the balconies, there's a parking lot and there's a road leading toward the bottom part of the valley. And so I was like, wow. So if you're being followed by somebody up top, you could just get a rope and rappel down to a car down there and you could then get away from them. And so I was thinking, how can I use that in the story? And that's how the whole second story started out of how I could use the casemate in the book. Awesome. It's like I had to figure out, why would they be chased? Who would be chasing them? It's like, oh, these guys could be chasing them for this reason. I mean, and it just all came together. It all clicked right there.
So we can conclude that probably the setting is very, very authentic, whereas the exploits or the hacks in the book are very hypothetical.
Yes, it's like, yeah, I don't have that kind of talent to make them real. I just like reporting on what other cool people are doing and stuff, you know, and helping them educate them on those things. It's like I don't know how to do this, but hey, this guy does it really well. It's like, learn from him.
So that was your stance on the literature part of my question. How about your favorite tech book? Is there something you could recommend to our listeners to, you know, something about InfoSec or IT security in general that helped you a lot because it's very informative, because it's very well written, out of any reason basically became your favorite tech book?
I would have to say, and say, I'm sure my publisher is going to hate me for this, but my biggest tech book is the internet. I mean, when it comes down to the essence of it, it's like it's the internet. And it's the different websites that you go to, the different blogs that are responding to it. But you do need to have some books and stuff, you know, right there. It's like, there's some great books from different publishing companies. Singer's has got a great section out now with the Seven Deadliest series, which is really good. And then also you've got the one that does Hacking Exposed, which are also some good books. So I did a plug for both, so hopefully that'll cover me. It's like, but quite frankly, it's like it. I don't want to give a specific one that influenced me, because what influenced me or what helped me is not going to help the next guy or like the person that's listening to this right now. You know, I mean, when they find out that I'm on it, it's probably like three people, but you know, hi mom. It's like, so it may not influence me. It's like, so the key thing is, and the biggest thing I suggest is, this field is so diverse. There are so many different avenues you can take, from programming to physical security to social engineering to vulnerability research to doing firewall and IDS maintenance. Look at what your passion is. Look what you're wanting to do in this and what you want to accomplish, and then start doing the research on what the best books are for that. So what are the best books for me? I don't think are going to be the best books for other people because of I'm such a diverse, I mean, I'm not trying to be the master of a craft. It's like, I mean, I really am very happy being the jack of all trades. I'd rather know a little bit about everything and then Google the rest of it than to know everything about one thing and then miss out on something. So, I mean, that's what I'm really trying to do. I'm really trying to, like I said, I don't sleep much and I'm a lousy father and horrible husband. So it's like, so I dedicate a lot of time to just doing as much research as I can. Cause I mean, there's just, I mean, I'm never going to learn all of it, but I sure am going to try.
Excellent. Okay. With that, I think, we are about to run out of time. Like to thank you very much for being on the show with me tonight. Is there anything you want to tell, well, the community that's listening right now or that might download the recorded streaming afterwards that we missed talking about in 1 minute?
I think 1 minute, my biggest thing I'd like to say to the community is don't just try to be something, do something. It's like, and try to be a positive change in the community. If you see something that's broken, if you see something that's wrong, try to fix it. You may fail at it, but you're failing for the right reasons. And it's like, because trust me, I fail at a lot of these things, but at least I'm doing it for the right reasons. It's like trying to affect a positive change. Try to not just see the weaknesses and the vulnerabilities, but try to see the solutions and then the solutions for those problems. Try to not just find the vulnerability, but find the patch to fix that vulnerability.
Excellent. I thank you so very much. I thank you, our listeners at Room IOI, and you'll hear us again in a month. Bye-bye and good night.